There's this thing that happens on Sunday evenings if you are a 9-to-5 working person. And it's this kind of feeling of dread that arrives, yeah, usually around 5 or 6 p.m. when the weekend is technically still happening, but it's already been psychologically vacated. And instead of being present in the remaining hours of it, you are somewhere in the future, trying to pre-experience Monday. You're running through the week's problems in advance because you're trying to get ahead of the anxiety by having it early, which of course doesn't work. But hey, that never stopped anyone, I guess. And sometimes I think about this particular human habit that we have of abandoning the present moment to go mentally live in some future that isn't even happening yet and can't actually be controlled from where we're standing, of course. And I think about the cost of this, the cumulative cost of spending enormous amounts of psychological energy trying to stabilize something that isn't going to stay still no matter what you do. So Alan Watts wrote a book about this sort of thing in 1951 called The Wisdom of Insecurity. And so the central argument, if you strip away the more florid prose, is that a significant amount of human suffering isn't coming from what's actually happening. It's coming from the resistance to what's happening. And it comes from the psychological effort of trying to make life feel more certain and controllable than it actually is. Which in 1951, that was a philosophical observation, but nowadays I think it reads more like a diagnosis. And I want to try to engage with this honestly, not really as a book summary, and also not as some Watts appreciation post or something. That's not what I'm going for here. I want to approach this more as a genuine conversation that focuses on the ideas. Then that includes the parts where the ideas are, they're easier described than practiced. So the central move that Watts makes early in the book is something that he doesn't name directly. But he did spend most of his career circling. And it's this idea that it's sometimes called the backwards law. So the basic shape of this is the harder that you pursue something, the more it recedes. So the act of grasping is itself what makes the thing ungraspable. Take for example, if you chase happiness directly, it becomes like this never-ending, frustrating performance. If you pursue security, it becomes anxiety about whether you are secure enough. And then, if you're pursuing certainty, well, that becomes an obsession with eliminating uncertainty, which that turns out to be a full-time job with no pension. And, that's a terrible work-life balance situation. And I think the purest modern expression of this is the, what I've called the self Improvement Industrial Complex. It's this culture of optimization that basically says, if you just get the morning routine right, and the supplements, and the right mindset, and you meditate enough, etc., then stability will follow. Peace will finally arrive. And the feeling that you're doing life correctly will finally arrive, and it will stay. But unfortunately, it never quite does it? Because the pursuit it's structured in such a way that it requires the destination to keep moving. And a solved self-improvement problem, well, that's basically a dead market, right? So the goalpost moves yet again. You tweak the routine some more. You buy another self-help book or something. You rearrange your habits, like someone who's desperately rotating a houseplant towards sunlight, convinced that this particular angle, this is the one where life, it will finally start to make sense. And there's finally going to be some meaning. Watts would probably say, and I think he'd be right, that this isn't a bug in the self-improvement industry. It is the feature. I mean, the industry is selling a solution to a problem that the industry itself is helping to generate, which is, if nothing else, it's impressively circular. And there's something that I find comical about the image of somebody with a perfectly optimized system for managing their anxiety about not being optimized enough. And, you know, if you've spent any time on wellness social media, this isn't actually a hypothetical. So there is another layer to Watts's argument that I think is worth looking at, because it goes somewhere that most self-help content won't go. His claim is the self, the sense of being a continuous separate I or me who is observing and managing your life and trying to improve it, this itself is a kind of constructed fiction. It's not exactly an illusion. It's more like, I guess you could say it's more like a useful story that became a prison. And the ego, this sense of a bounded, persistent self, it spends a great deal of energy defending itself against change and uncertainty, and against the basic reality that nothing about you is as fixed or as continuous as it feels from the inside, which probably sounds a little abstract, until you start to notice just how much of daily psychological life is actually just ego maintenance. Yeah. You know, it's the constant psychic maintenance, you know, project. It's like a psychic maintenance project of making sure that the story you tell about yourself remains coherent and defensible, and that it remains something you can present to other people and to yourself without too much visible contradiction. I've talked before on this channel about social performance, you know, the way people manage impressions and present these calibrated versions of themselves depending on the audience. But Watts is pointing at something underneath that. That performance isn't just social, because you're performing a continuous self to yourself. So you are narrating your own existence in real time to maintain the fiction of a stable protagonist. And the exhaustion that comes from that process, the tiredness of being a consistent person across every context and relationship and every version of your life simultaneously, that's real. And it rarely gets named as what it actually is, which is the ego working overtime to justify its own existence. And there's something that I find almost, I'd say, relieving about that framing, because if the exhaustion is structural and built into the nature of self-consciousness itself, then it's not evidence that something has gone wrong with you specifically. Okay, so this is the part of the book that I think gets underreported in most discussion of Watts. And I think it's probably the most interesting section for where we are right now. So his argument is that the Western concept of God was psychologically providing something specific, something like a cosmic guarantee. It was the assurance that the self persists and that suffering actually means something. There's some point to it. And that the universe is it's organized around something actually stable and benevolent rather than just indifferent chaos. And then for a lot of people in secular modernity, that concept collapsed or it eroded or just stopped being convincing somewhere between the Enlightenment and the comment section. And Watts' observation is that people didn't stop needing what God was providing psychologically. They just found substitutes. And probably the most culturally dominant substitute right now is the self-improvement as personal redemption arc. This is the idea that if you do the right things in the right order, you'll eventually arrive at a version of yourself that is, you know, stable and worthy, and more or less protected from the worst that life can do, which is structurally, that's exactly what religion was also promising, just with better marketing and a Spotify subscription. But the anxiety didn't leave when the religion did. it just changed clothes. And it became, I guess you could say, like optimization anxiety, productivity guilt, where there's this this nagging sense that you're always slightly behind and becoming whoever it is that you're supposed to be. Now, Watts would say that until you actually examine the underlying demand for this cosmic or monotheistic guarantee, you're just going to keep finding new things to put in that position. It's just human nature, pretty much. And, maybe it's the, maybe it's the market or the algorithm, the morning routine. Maybe it's the next self-help book, just with a slightly different system for achieving the same thing that the last one promised you. Whatever the case, the hole does not close. It just gets redecorated, pretty much. All right, so here is where I want to push back on something a little, because I think Watts deserves genuine engagement rather than just, more appreciation. The ideas in The Wisdom of Insecurity, they're real. They're legitimate ideas. I mean, the backwards law, the ego exhaustion, the God-shaped hole and its secular substitutes, that's all real. And the core argument that resisting impermanence produces more suffering than the impermanence itself, I think that holds up too. But there's a version of Watts that gets weaponized in a way that I find a little irritating. This is the just be present version, the wellness retreat version. So this is the version that gets printed on the linen cushions and used to suggest that if you're still anxious and you're still worn out, you haven't quite surrendered enough to the flow of things. Now, the problem with that version is that it basically and discreetly relocates the entire problem right back inside the individual, which is exactly what Watts was arguing against. Because there is a real difference between suffering that comes from psychological resistance to reality, which Watts is talking about, and suffering that comes from truly difficult material circumstances. And therefore, those two things require different responses. So, telling somebody who's in genuine financial precarity to just release their attachment to security, that's not really wisdom. That's a category error that's just dressed up in philosophical language. And the anxiety about making rent isn't primarily a mindfulness problem. And then, of course, there's Watts himself, who wrote extensively and convincingly about non-attachment, while being, by most accounts, fairly attached to alcohol and a personal life of some considerable chaos. But that doesn't invalidate his ideas. I mean, plenty of people have described conditions that they couldn't fully inhabit themselves. I mean, it does, however, complicate the deification. I mean, the ideas, those are certainly worth taking seriously. But look, the man was not a guru. And, you know, if he were alive today, I'm sure he would be the first one to admit that. And he was just a human being, like the rest of us, struggling with his own demons. So I think the thing that gets lost when Watts gets turned into a wellness product is what he actually meant by acceptance. Because the white linen cushion version of acceptance, that's just basically a form of passivity. That's like a spiritual shrug. The things are difficult. Resistance is futile. So just float downstream and trust the universe. Tomorrow never knows, right? And look, this is, at best, a fairly unhelpful advice for someone dealing with a genuinely debilitating problem. And at worst, it's a philosophical justification for not doing anything about anything. That's not what Watts was describing. The distinction that he's actually making is between two different kinds of suffering. So there's the suffering that comes from the difficult thing itself, right? And then there's the additional layer of suffering, which that's the suffering about the suffering. And the resistance to the fact that the difficult thing is even happening. And it's also suffering that comes from the demand that reality be different than it is, you know, before that you'll engage with it in an honest way. Watts' argument is that the second layer of suffering is optional. It's not easy to drop, but it is technically optional. So you can work to change your circumstances, right? Without the additional psychological tax of suffering about the fact that the circumstances require changing. And those things are actually separable. I mean, it's very difficult to do that, but it's possible. They just don't feel separable most of the time. And well, personally, I find that distinction to me, it's useful in a way that a lot of philosophical ideas aren't, because it's not asking you to feel okay about things that aren't okay. It just asks whether the resistance is helping. Usually it isn't. And when you notice that, you know, really notice that rather than just intellectually acknowledging it, that's apparently most of the work right there. All right, so here's where I'd like to land with all this, because I think the honest version of what Watts is offering, it isn't necessarily a resolution or a solution, and it's definitely not peace in the sense of everything feeling manageable and calm and, you know, finally correctly arranged somehow in some neat fashion. It's a slightly different relationship with the difficulty. Not fixing it or trying to transcend it, just carrying it with just a little less additional weight than usual. Which sounds reasonable and realistic enough, right? And I find something worth knowing in the fact that Watts wrote this book during a person, a period of genuine personal instability. His own life certainly was not settled. I mean, he wasn't writing from some position of achieved equanimity. He was writing from inside the same problem that he was describing, which is basically the difficulty of being a conscious creature trying to find solid ground in something that doesn't really have any. And I think what makes the wisdom of insecurity feel, you know, less like instructions and more like company or a companion of sorts. Well, my guess is that that's actually what most people are looking for when they pick up something like this. They're not looking for a system or a protocol of sorts. They're just looking for the recognition that their difficulty is real and valid and legitimate, that it's structural, and that it's not evidence of some colossal personal failure. And that also that someone else lived with this in an honest way and was able to write it down. So Watts couldn't fully practice what he preached, but neither can most people. I mean, the backwards law applies to trying to master the backwards law as much as anything else. And the harder that you pursue non-attachment, the more attached to non-attachment you become. And that's, you know, that is either, I guess, deeply ironic or just accurate, depending on how you're feeling about existence on any given day. I think it's just human nature. It's part of the human condition. And, you know, maybe that is enough. Not the illusion of certainty or stability, just having the occasional conversation with the difficulty, whatever that might be for you. Preferably without, you know, the white linen cushion. So I guess that's it for me today. You should, if you haven't checked out that book, I think you should. And once again, thanks so much for listening.